The following is a presentation of Crane's Chicago Business, delivered by your earbuds at WGN Radio.
I'm Amy Guth, and today on Crane's Daily Gist, Chicago teachers are on strike, and classes are canceled until an agreement is reached. We'll talk about it coming up on the podcast. But first, earlier today, I spoke with Crane's residential real estate reporter, Dennis Rodkin, about a new approach to home repair before going to market, big sales in the West Loop, and how the Willowbrook housing market might shift with the closing of the Sterigenics plant. And then we also talked about the house for sale on the site of what was John Wayne Gacy's home back in the day. I mean, what, like I'm not going to ask him about that? Come on. Anyway, here's our conversation. It's Thursday, so that means it's time for a visit with our good friend Dennis Rodkin from Crane's Chicago Business to talk about all of the residential real estate stories of the week. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, so we have lots to talk about this week. So many things. I would love to start with this interesting story about brokers that pair homeowners with contractors to help with rehab, but not in the way of just like a referral. The actual, these people will help you pay for it way.
You know, this is quite a phenomenon. There are four major brokerages all with different deals. I didn't get into the specifics in the story of how they're different, but essentially what happens is you've got a dated house. You really can't put it on the market looking dated. I mean, we've talked about how people shop first on the internet. The pictures have to sizzle. It's got to look right. And buyers don't want to do any work anymore. I want to bring my toothbrush and move in.
What do you think that is? Let me just hit pause on that.
Well, I think one of the reasons is people, it's a little sort of millennial sounding, but people are busier now, right? Yeah. Partly in many couples, both of us work. It used to be that only one of us worked. Yeah. This is a generation or more ago. And so one person might have had more time to do the moving and the painting the kitchen or whatever had to be done. But it also is, I mean, it takes time. There are also, you know, countless people have moved in and said, well, you know, over the next few years, we'll paint this, we'll do that, and then it doesn't get done. And 10 years later, they're saying, oh, yeah, we were going to paint that. So I think in general, and the other thing is there's also a real taste for new. The market really, the real estate market is really about new these days. We're not as interested in the Victorians and the Frank Lloyd Wrights that
I'll take all those off everyone's hands. Exactly. Well, fine.
So all of those together mean that if I'm going to put my house on the market and I still have those dark cherry cabinets, I still have the sort of imitation prairie style wood banding in my rooms, that sort of thing, I really need to update it in advance of selling it. But maybe I don't have the cash to do that. You know, it might be $15,000, $20,000 to repaint all the cabinetry and put in new appliances, that sort of thing, update some bathrooms, replace some tile. And so sellers have often said, well, I'm just going to have to market it the way it is. You'll just have to list it looking like it does. So now there's this new wave of solutions where you get hooked up by your real estate brokerage. As I said, some they're different from each other, but you get hooked up with somebody who is going to rehab the home for you in ways that make it more marketable. So it looks like what the buyers are generally looking for. And it's essentially an interest-free loan. It's not literally an interest-free loan. What's happening is you're going to pay for these improvements out of the proceeds from the sale. So you're not putting in cash up front. You're not saying, here, I've got $15,000, see how far that'll go in this house. You're saying, we need to do these, let's say, 10 things. You say it'll cost me $20,000. I don't have the cash, but I expect to have that in the proceeds of my sale. So the deal is you fix it all. And at sale time, the money goes to this rehab firm or whatever the arrangement is.
That seems reasonable because putting in $20,000 of work could yield quite a bit more in your sale.
Most agents will tell you that. Yeah, that you, well, so that one of the phrases I love that I learned years ago is done sells. Rather than having a place where people walk in and say, oh, I probably need to fix that. You fix it and it sells better. And the idea is, as you said, if you put in 20, you might get 30 more in your price, whatever it is. People tend to walk into buyers tend to walk into a house and say, oh, that needs to be replaced. That'll be $1,500 when actually it's like $800. Mm. Everybody thinks it's going to cost a lot more than it's going to cost. And the other thing is, this place looks good. I'm more likely to bid up for it. So yes, you are likely, though not guaranteed, to get back more than what you put in. So it's good for everybody. The other effect of these, according to the brokerage, is that you'll sell the house faster. You're not going to have it sitting on the market with people saying, yeah, I just don't want to look at an old, dated interior. they'll come and look at it and buy it. So not only they think, do you sell at a higher price, but you also sell faster.
And I imagine it also speeds the process because those steps of going back and, okay, if I agree to fix the roof, then right. you can do this. And, right. you know, all of those things kind of go away when so much has already been taken care of.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really interesting. That's a smart idea.
I think it is.
And enterprising contractor there.
One sign that it's a smart idea is that four different big brokerages are doing it. It's not just one company saying we ought to do mm-hmm. it. It's generally, this is sort of becoming the standard for the brokerages that have the muscle to do it. And that sort of gives you an idea that if you're going to put your house on the market, you probably better go this way.
So one of them is Real Vitalize. I like a good punny name.
Yeah.
Real Vitalize.
Yeah.
It's real estate. It's vitalizing. It's revitalizing. I like it.
Well, how do you like Curbio?
Curbio. Well, it's got to have a webby thing. So it yeah. has to have an EO or an yeah. RR at the end.
Exactly.
Right. So those are kind of the big two that are like Baird & Warner, Berkshire Hathaway.
Caldwell Banker.
I like this. That's a good idea. It's yeah. smart. And I imagine if you're like...
The fourth is Compass. Sorry,
Compass. Yeah. Right. But I feel like if you're at the point where you're just like, I just want to sell and be done.
Right.
This is a godsend.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, so one of the sort of downsides to this idea is it's partly a symbol or a signal that our market isn't in great shape.
Right.
Because if I thought I had an enormous amount coming back to me in the sale, I might put it on my credit cards, borrow the money, tap home equity in some other way, and do the improvements that were needed, either to put it on the market, or the other thing that I've said often on Twitter is, I wouldn't have delayed these things while I was living there. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of these houses that go on the market, or that have gone on the market with the old cherry cabinets and that sort of thing, they haven't been improved because I don't want to put more money into my house because I already know it might be a losing proposition or my proceeds might be really shallow. So I think having this advantage of being able to do it without paying the money out of my pocket is probably helpful, but it may be a sign that things aren't as whoop-de-doo in our market as they might be.
Until we look to the West Loop.
Where it's whoop-de-doo.
Where it's definitely whoop-de-doo.
Good segue. That's it.
So the West Loop, we've talked about this, of the price tags on some home sales that have happened there.
Yeah.
And they just keep going up. I mean, I think that, what was our last one? It was
Yeah, $5.7 million for a penthouse. So this story is about prices that are lower than that, $4
million. Oh, is that all?
Yeah, exactly. But I did say in the story, this isn't a record, but what it is, this building, Hayden West Loop on Washington, just closed one $4 million penthouse. And one of the brokers told me that there are two more that will close in the next few weeks, and I'll probably report on them also at $4 million. So in that building, three $4 million penthouses. In this other building, a $5.7 million penthouse. Back to Hayden West Loop, about 16 condos, including those penthouses, sold for $2 million or more. 16 condos in one building in the West Loop at $2 million or more, including the $4 million sales. That's eye-popping alone, but then I compared to the Gold Coast. So this one building compared to an entire neighborhood, 16 in this one building, and in the past year, 17 $2 million condos sold in the Gold Coast.
In the whole neighborhood?
In the whole neighborhood.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
So, I mean, the West Loop just keeps, the hits keep coming, right? The multi-million dollar sales happen again and again and again.
How far west is this on Washington?
This is in the 1100 block.
Okay. Still, that's like,
yeah,
that's pretty far west.
And the $5.7 million penthouse is in the 900 block.
No end to things right now.
It
in the
is.
West Loop.
It's really hard to believe. And you know, somebody, when this story came out, somebody asked me on Twitter, oh, yeah, a lot of sales, but is there a huge amount of inventory, which is something you and I have discussed? Sure, things are selling, but how much is still sitting there on the market? There's only, I can't remember the exact numbers, but there's less than 3 months worth of inventory on the market in West Loop of $2 million condos, which is to say there are as many on the market as it would take less than 3 months to sell at the current pace.
Wow.
And that's really, that's tight inventory at $2 million and up. Look, in almost any other neighborhood, there's a surfeit of $2 million condos.
For sure.
Any other neighborhood where there would be $2 million condos.
And who, do you have a sense of who is buying them?
You know, I keep assuming it's going to be the McDonald's and Google employees. The broker on this one said that the timing of this building is not quite that. This building started and was sold really before those people were coming in. He said about a quarter of these buyers, and probably this extends to other high-end sales, are empty nesters coming from the North Shore and the West Suburbs.
Oh, interesting.
But that's about a quarter of them. And the rest are people who have essentially grown up in the West Loop. I was a renter I bought a, let's say, $1 million condo. I stepped up, that sort of thing. Because, you know, the West Loop has become this entity that we know of. And if I got there, when would I have been a renter that I'm now buying a $2 million condo? Let's say I've been living there for 15, 20 years, and I've taken the different steps in my lifespan. Now I'm at the point where we can afford a $2 million condo, and I want to stay in the West Loop where all my institutions and restaurants and everything else
all the
are.
Things where it's that's your neighborhood, that's where you are. It's interesting, I'm over there a lot, I'm in that area a lot, and you know, working on various things, and I feel like there's something new to look at every time I'm there. And it's not, and I've talked with Danny Ecker about this a lot of in the commercial space of just
he just
quickly,
had the thing on the related proposal to build a tall office building.
And, and those are getting further and further west. And that's I mean, that's getting so interesting. So it's like I start seeing a building permit. And I go and read it, and I'm like, okay, what's going in here? What's happening? And so many of them are demos to build something even bigger. Yeah. So it's, I mean, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. The West Loop is going to look so different in just even a year.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's different every, you know, couple weeks when I'm there. It's so interesting. So
it's true.
It's interesting that real estate is keeping up with it so much. All right. Let us switch to two other stories I want to talk about. One is about some home sales in Willowbrook. And this is an interesting story that I think it cannot possibly be talked about enough because there's a lot of health at stake. There's a lot of stuff going on here. But at first glance, it's like, oh, it's about Willowbrook home sales. But when you get to the why, suddenly things change. Talk me through this.
Well, Sterigenics, as most people know in the Chicago area, was revealed within the last few years to be at the center of a very high risk of cancer. Sterigenics is a company whose facilities in Willowbrook sterilize medical and food industry equipment. And there was a toxic substance in the air within reach, within close range of their building, generated by them, that was related to a very high incidence of cancer, especially within a mile and a half of the factories. So there was a lot of back and forth over the course of the past few years over their permit and whether they should be allowed to stay. And finally, at the end of September, came a final permanent answer. They are shutting down in Willowbrook.
Which was a big deal. Cranes reported on this. Like a lot. There was a lot of reporting around that. But connecting it to real estate, it becomes another thing.
That's where I come in just a little bit later. Yeah, it was hard to pull out the real estate market in Willowbrook from the real estate market in the suburbs, which is generally saggy these days. But one of the things I found is that year to date, home sales in Willowbrook, so the big news about about Sterigenics was really happening in late 2018, early and mid 2019. So if you look at the first 8 months of 2019, home sales were down over 17% in Willowbrook, while in DuPage County in general, they were down about 8.5%. So bigger drop in Willowbrook by far than around the region, not necessarily connected to Sterigenics, but it seems likely. And I spoke to five different real estate agents who all said, oh yeah, there were people who backed out of a contract on a house because they put down the contract and then found that they couldn't sleep at night because they were thinking, we're moving to a place where there's a high risk of cancer. There were people saying, I just don't want to look in Willowbrook because I have kids and I just don't want to put them in this environment. Yeah, I didn't call any real estate agents who said, oh no, it's not a problem.
It's fine. No.
Yeah, and real estate agents aren't in the business of telling you sad stories, right? They generally want to make things sound good. Not a single one I spoke to tried to make it sound good.
Wow.
They all said, yes, I have this example. I saw that happen. And so sales were down. The houses were taking a lot longer on the market. Now that there is this permanent shutdown late September, the question will be, do sales pick up? Do they go off the market faster? And I did have one agent who told me that a house that had gone off the market because all the offers they were getting were rock bottom offers from people who probably thought, well, I can get a house there for nothing, investors and others. They'd taken it off the market. And right after the Sterigenics shutdown announcement was made, she got a call saying, we'd take it for full price. So the idea is that it probably will have an effect. And one thing that people ask is, well, won't that toxic substance be around for a very long time? There was some testing reported back in March 2019 when there was a temporary shutdown of Sterigenics. The presence of this toxic substance dropped by 50 to 90% in the first few days. So the assumption is that going forward, there will not be this elevated risk of cancer, and there won't be this sort of cloud hanging over a home sale in Willowbrook.
That's really wild. I was going to say, if I were a realtor in Willowbrook, I would be finding every scientist I could, testing water and soil and all that, saying, when is it safe? When can I, in good conscience, sell a home in this area? Because I would feel very conflicted about that.
Well, it was interesting. I spoke to a woman who had lived in her home for 40 years and was having trouble selling it, ended up actually losing it in a sheriff's auction. She said, we raised our kids here, but I'm not surprised that people don't want to raise their kids here now.
Sure.
And that's a version of what you just said. People were worried. They didn't know. And of course, uncertainty is always the worst thing in any market. Now you have at least the certainty that Sterigenics is gone.
There's no more of this chemical being put into the environment. And I think getting that message that, hey, the levels drop significantly within days, I think that's important to share, because I think the prevailing wisdom is, oh, once it's polluted for decades.
Right, yeah.
You know, toxic waste, it's around for hundreds of years. Like, I think we need to think about it in very, you know, data-driven terms there, but that's very
And going back to your mythic, your fictional realtor, I would, if I were a real estate agent in Willowbrook, I'd be saying that. I'd be saying, look, you know, things are very different than they were just a short time ago.
It's not uranium. It is a cancer-causing chemical, and that has major impact, but it's not going to be here for 100 years.
Right.
Theoretically. We hope.
We hope.
Gosh. Well, that's a super interesting story. Let's go to another very interesting story.
Yeah, boy.
Because the one thing I think we have not yet talked about here on this podcast on Dennis Day is serial killers. But now we need to.
Now we got there.
We've worked in many things. We have segued to so many things. But yet it is now time for us to talk about serial killers. That is because the house that replaced John Wayne Gacy's home is for sale.
Yeah. And it's taken several price cuts, which is not a huge surprise. It's been on the market since August. It has taken three different $10,000 price cuts. I do think this will be hard to sell. So it's a replacement of the house. John Wayne Gacy lived in a house on Summerdale in Norwood Park Township, where he told police he had buried the remains of 28 victims. Ultimately, the police found the remains of 29 victims on the property, under the house, under the fire pit, and things like that. And in the course of digging up those remains, well, the house became so ruined that it was demolished.
Sure.
Property sat empty, and I think it would have been very hard to sell the same house.
Well, sure.
Property sat empty for several years, and in the mid-80s, a woman bought it apparently to build a house for her parents. That's what the Tribune reported in the mid-1980s. They knew what the history of the property was. They were fine with it. So they built a house. They sold it in 2004. So that's a second household willing to live there. That household is now selling the house. Will they find a buyer? It's hard to say. You know, it's a long enough time ago. The actual house is gone. The address is gone. The address has been changed.
Oh, it's like retiring a jersey number.
Well, kind of like that.
For not good reasons.
But for very evil reasons, yeah.
It's more like retiring a hurricane name.
There you go.
That's it.
That's it. And so it's going to be interesting to see if it sells, how quickly it sells. I would imagine that people still ghoulishly go by that.
Oh, sure.
Site.
Oh, sure. Well, there's an interesting detail in this story that I want to point out, and that was that in 1984, it was acquired in a sheriff's sale by paying off $30,000 in back taxes owed on two mortgages by Gacy, his mother, and two sisters.
Yeah.
I
was surprised too. I pulled that. So I went back when I was doing the story, I went back to some 70s and 80s Tribune coverage of Gacy to find out what I could about the house. And I was really surprised. This is when this next house was built in the 80s. I was really surprised, and I didn't have time to really dig into it, but apparently his mother and his sisters were also owners of the house.
Interesting. Wow. That is interesting. I mean, so I talked to a couple of people about that. I just mentioned this, and I was talking to a couple of friends about this story. And interestingly, one of them believes in ghosts. One of them does not, right? So the one that said she believed in ghosts said, oh, no way. You could not pay me, even though it's a new house, just bad vibes on the site.
Right.
I saw poltergeist. I'm not doing it. The person who said that he did not believe in ghosts, he's like, I don't believe in any of that. It's hocus pocus. And I was like, okay, would you live in that house? He goes, absolutely not. Okay, why not? And he didn't really have an answer, which I thought was kind of funny. I was like, well, either you believe in there's some bad juju there or you don't, which is it? And he was like, I don't. And he really couldn't give an answer. Finally, he was like, I admit that doesn't make sense. But I mean, I think it would just be kind of a drag to have people going by all the time. Like, hey, can I take a bunch of goth kids? Like, hey, we want to take a picture in your front yard. Can you not right now?
Yeah, exactly. Plus your neighbors. I mean, I would imagine the first time anybody meets you, they say, well, so do you know, do you know what happened here?
Hi, here's a casserole. Did you know you live in the murder house?
Yes, okay. As a matter of fact, I do. You know, what was interesting was the comments I got on Twitter. There were several people who just wanted to sort of tell their run-ins or near run-ins with Gacy.
Oh,
just
interesting.
Just because that's such a vivid...
Yeah.
I didn't live in Chicago at the time, but for people who did in the late 70s when all that was happening, it's very vivid. And so there were people telling that on Twitter. But then there was also... It was almost as if I was offering this house for sale because people were saying, no, thank you. No, thank you. I'll pass.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, the real estate agent, who, by the way, did not return my call for this story, the real estate agent is probably getting a little of that as well.
Oh, I'm sure that's an exhausting job to be that real estate agent. Yeah. Being like, oh, again.
Yeah.
This again. I mean, yeah, I was looking at some of the comments you got on Twitter and I saw a whole lot of, nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just feel like, nope, no thank you, I'm out.
Somebody, a friend of mine on Facebook, a college friend of mine, said one of the things to think about is while those past two owners may have known what had gone on the site, there wasn't as much internet talk about things like this at the time. So, of course, they went into it with their eyes open, but maybe they weren't quite as aware of the implications of living there, that sort
of
thing.
That's interesting.
And I wondered if in this internet era it would make it... I mean, my story's out, and other people have reported this as well. The Sun-Times reported it. TMZ reported it. Mm-hmm. So I would think that some people would say, I don't want to do this.
I just think, bad vibes. Yeah. I wouldn't. Also, that's not a convenient neighborhood for me, so there's
no,
that.
No, but it is a nice house.
Yeah, it's an adorable little house, but I would just be a little... too creeped out by things that go up in the night. Not because I think like his ghost, is there a ghost of dead people? Not that. I just think there's just bad vibes in the air, you know?
Yeah. A name like Gacy hanging over your property is just a
little. Right. That's a lot to carry around. I feel like you want to walk in a house and go, oh, it just feels good in here and it feels nice. I feel comfortable. I can watch a horror movie and not be freaked out here. Yeah. Right. And I don't know if you'd
this
get that.
This is not going to happen in that house. That's exactly right.
I don't think you'd get that. Well, I think that's interesting. And I'm not just saying that because I lived in a murder house as a child.
Oh.
My parents bought a house that was a crime scene.
Lovely.
And so they bought it much under market. And same, neighbors knew that. They'd be like, oh, do you know about, like, yes, they know.
Yeah, we know.
And like a lot of the deceased possessions were still in the attic. So we had to like be in touch with her family a few times. Like, hey, we found her, you know, photo albums, if you want these. I mean, it was a
it wasn't quite at the level of ghastliness of John Wayne Gacy and 33 victims.
No, only one deceased and like some ambiguity around cause of death. So like there was an acquittal and eventually said maybe this was a suicide, but maybe it was a murder. It was kind of a weird thing with a lot of unanswered questions. So I think the neighborhood was more interested in like, what do you know?
Yeah,
because like the ex-husband moved in to sell it to my parents or not moved in, but he, you know, he was the seller because they were good friends and still had the, it was a weird thing.
Wow.
I know. There's a book in there somewhere. I don't know.
It sounds like it. It's a little less open and shut too than the Gacy one, because in the Gacy one, there are no questions whether it was.
That's right.
I mean, he killed 33 men and boys.
You don't have 29 accidental deaths on your property. You definitely, and he confessed.
He confessed, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Although,
what I'm fascinated
I'm a little disappointed
by,
that he thought it was 28.
He thought it was 28 and there were 29, the remains of 29 on his property.
I need my serial killers to be a little more on top of things. Because you know how they like keep souvenirs? I watch a lot of true crime. You know, they like watch, they keep track of this and they know these details in all the true crime shows. I need my serial killers to be a little more on top of things.
It's too late for you to tell him that, of course, because he was executed.
Indeed, but you know, for future serial killers listening, for the serial killer contingent, I don't know, I'm getting fired today. Anyway, it has been a day. That's all for this week. What can we expect to see in the week ahead?
Well, I'm looking at, there's a group that is building 33 new units of housing in Englewood. What they're trying to do essentially is fill up vacant lots because there are so many vacant lots in Englewood. There's more to the story than that. They're kind of working in concentric circles out from some homeless veterans housing to rentals for the general market. And then they hope to do rehab for sale of some existing homes and really kind of create a new community in Englewood, a new stabilized piece of the community in Englewood. So that's one thing. And the other is there's a man in Aurora who for 30 years has lived in one of the craziest houses in the Chicago area, a house by Bruce Goff that looks like a gigantic sliced onion. And it's incredible. It's got walls made of coal. It's the ribs of the building are from Quonset huts, military Quonset huts. It's an amazing, weird house. But this man is getting an award from Landmarks Illinois for his stewardship of this property. Yeah, and he's a really interesting man.
I agree with you, and I don't even know anything about him yet.
Yeah.
I look forward to that one. All right, we'll talk to you next time. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Amy.
Coming up, a Northwestern researcher aims to fight the opioid crisis with an implantable device. We'll talk about that and other stories right after this word from our sponsor. Running a small business comes with hard work, a fair amount of stress, and a lot of responsibility. Wintrust believes you shouldn't have to manage that alone. The company's small business bankers are true partners. They get to know the businesses they work with so they can offer personalized support and tools that help owners reach their long-term goals. If you're looking for a true banking partner, you've found one. Visit Wintrust.com to learn more. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Chicago Teachers Union members and support staff are on strike as of this morning. CPS officials prepped parents with autocalls and emails last night warning about the strike, saying classes will be canceled until an agreement is reached. Earlier today, CTU and the city resumed negotiations. At a news conference last night, Mayor Lightfoot said she's, quote, disappointed about the walkout and said she's responded to the union's demands to put proposals in writing, quote, in several ways. And when asked about the learning curve during her first months in office, she also said she wants to get a deal done because that's what's most important to children and families, adding that she wants to make sure to be fair to teachers and support staff and that she believes the offers on the table meet that criteria. CTU President Jesse Sharkey, however, said the deal did not achieve what was needed to bring, quote, justice and high-quality schools to the children and teachers of Chicago. School buildings will be open during the strike, breakfast and lunch will be provided, and students have a meal to take home. Bus drivers, however, will not be making pickups, and regular nurses and special education instructors will not be at school. And there will be no after-school activities either. The CTA will offer free rides to students until the strike ends, and contract nurses will be available for some support. And with a last-minute deal reached with employees at the Chicago Park District, students can head there and to public libraries for after-school activities. The district is offering a site locator for places parents can send children for the duration of the strike. It's unclear what impact the Park District deal has on the teachers' union side of the table. CTU President Jesse Sharkey spoke at length about the importance of solidarity at a Monday rally, but Vice President Stacey Davis Gates seemed to approve of the Park District deal, tweeting, one down, two to go. Lightfoot said earlier that the union's latest offer would cost the district $2.5 billion, that the union has insisted on bargaining over outside issues, and that it has seemed intent on striking for some time. Find more information and analysis about the strike at chicagobusiness.com. Cresco Labs announced this week that it's received state approval to sell marijuana for recreational use out of its 5 existing medical dispensaries in Illinois. Cresco says it's the first company in the state to receive licenses to both grow and sell marijuana for recreational use. The company operates medical dispensaries in Champaign, Wrigleyville, Rockford, Elmwood Park, and Buffalo Grove. Cresco said in a release that it would operate its Illinois dispensaries under the Sunnyside brand, which emphasizes health and wellness while aiming to normalize marijuana consumption by educating the public about, quote, positive benefits of using cannabis. The state has slowly been rolling out licenses to prepare for legalization of recreational marijuana on January 1st. Only one other company, Green Thumb, has been able to secure a license to sell recreational marijuana out of its medical dispensaries. PharmaCann, Curative Health Cultivation, and Ascend Wellness all received approval to grow recreational marijuana. Commercial landlords in North Suburban Cook County will shoulder more of the county's tax burden when they pay their property tax bills next year. Cook County Assessor Fritz Kagi recently wrapped up the reassessment process for the county's northern suburbs, and the results confirm what many landlords had feared. Elected on a reform agenda last year, Kagi has placed much higher values on office, apartment, and other commercial properties than did predecessor Joseph Berrios. Many landlords are bracing for big tax hikes as a result. The total assessed value of all commercial and industrial real estate in North Suburban Cook County rose 74.4% from 2018, according to an analysis of data from the assessor's office. That's almost 5 times the 15.6% increase for all residential property in the northern suburbs. Kagi says commercial assessments have risen so much largely because Berrios used incorrect assumptions in his valuation process, resulting in unreasonably low assessments. He contends he's merely fixing a broken system. Few local landlords quibble quibble with that argument, but they still worry the assessor will push up one of their biggest costs, real estate taxes, and depress property values. Still, property owners won't know how their higher assessments will affect their taxes until next summer, when they receive the second installment of their real estate tax bills. The gist here is that an assessment increase doesn't automatically translate into a tax hike of the same percentage. What matters for an individual property owner is how much the assessment rises relative to assessed values of other properties, but not the absolute change. Taxes also depend on the levy, how much taxing bodies, mainly municipalities and school districts, decide to collect in property taxes next year. Another key variable is the equalization factor, or a multiplier determined by the state to achieve uniform property assessment. In northern suburban Cook County, however, the numbers clearly show that the tax burden has shifted to commercial landlords. And while that's bad news for commercial landlords, it's pretty good news for north suburban homeowners, as some could receive a property tax cut next year. The rest of Cook County's property owners will find out what all this means for them over the next 2 years. KGE will assess south suburban Cook County next year, and the city of Chicago itself, which is home to the county's biggest and most valuable properties, in 2021. In one final story for today, a Northwestern researcher known for developing wearable tech got a $10 million federal grant to create a potentially life-saving implantable device for people addicted to opioids. John Rogers, one of the world's top researchers in materials science and a professor at Northwestern, secured the money from the National Institute of Health to develop the implant, which would administer a low dose of naloxone when it senses low oxygen levels. The device could prove instrumental in combating a crisis that claims around 130 lives a day, according to the National Institute on Drug Abuse. Rogers, who lives in Wilmette, said he hopes that the USB-sized naloxone implant could be a new frontier in biomedical engineering, adding that it's a natural extension to other types of implants used to enhance human health, like pacemakers and cochlear implants. The implant, which would be worn in the abdomen, automatically responds to a drop in blood oxygenation levels by contacting first responders and dispensing a dose of the life-saving naloxone, which can reverse the effects of a potentially fatal overdose of opioids in minutes. Rogers is known for engineering tiny wearable devices that can track biomedical info. In addition to creating a fingernail patch that monitors UV exposure for L'Oreal, he's also teamed up with Gatorade to produce a skin patch that captures sweat to tell users how much fluid and electrolytes they're losing. Until next week, that's all for Crane's Daily Gist. Thanks so much to producer Haima Black, as well as to today's guest, Dennis Rodkin. Find business news, analysis, data, and so much more at chicagobusiness.com. And be sure to visit the site for a look at the winners of Crane's annual Coolest Office Space competition, which recognizes the city's most well-designed workspaces. Let's continue the conversation with hashtag Crane's Daily Gist, or find me, Amy Guth, on Twitter and tweet me about the business stories most on your mind. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you right back here next week.